Busy city life makes it hard to think about and work at integrating our faith with our lives. Welcome to the Cathedral Podcast, produced and hosted by Jenny Ho Huan. Each episode, we want to help you relate core Christian truths to your daily life. Whether it's science, philosophy, cultural trends, or life stories, we bring you authentic and unrehearsed conversations to spark insight and strengthen your faith and your life. Hello, everyone. Pei here from the Faith and Life team at St. Andrew's Cathedral. In a bit of a role switch today, we have Jenny Ho Huan on the other side as our guest.
Hello.
And we're going to draw on her wealth of experience as a pastor, mentor, shepherd, someone who's helped a lot of people walk through probably quite a few valleys and wrestling with their faith. And the topic we're going to cover today is feelings. I think we've all heard different opinions on our feelings. They're unreliable. Mm-hmm. Don't be led by them. You know, they come and go. So, Jenny, can you just kick us off by helping us unpack some of this? Like, how do we even begin to view our emotions as God-given? Like, why did He give them to us? What are they? Yeah. Can you share some of your thoughts?
Yeah. I think it's very common for us to think of emotions as not so trustworthy, because we are rational beings, and when we make decisions, we think that we are using our rational mind. We do the pros and cons, the benefit and cost analysis. And so we run to that conclusion that it's the rationality that's helping us make the decisions. But in fact, a lot of studies are showing that our rationality is a lot of times driven by our emotions. So the question is not so much whether emotions are reliable, and rationality is more reliable than emotions. But they are just, I think the issue is understanding that God gave us all these range of capacities, and they have to be harnessed and used and tutored and tamed and trained to serve the purpose for which God gave it to us. One of the things that of course do bother me as a woman is how there are stereotypes of women being like more emotional, and but there's a scientific basis for why we appear more emotional, and that's just because of the way our brains are wired. So emotions is also tied to our biochemistry, especially our neurocircuitry. And women's brains are wired to have more what they call horizontal connections. So we just make more connections. So that is why sometimes we appear to be more emotional, because when you give us an issue, we are not thinking in a compartment. We are thinking in departments. And all the subsidiary departments also come into play. So we appear more emotional that way. But that doesn't mean that therefore women make lousier decision makers or leaders. As again, social sciences and all that is showing, even leadership studies today shows that a lot of times women make really good senior leaders as well. So I think with that backdrop, it's important. I'm trying to say two things. Number one, there is an appearance to emotion that we distrust, primarily because we think decision-making is a thought process and just absolutely objective and rational, which is already, in the first place, questionable. It's not true. And secondly, I think men and women are wired differently. And women may appear more emotional, but that does not mean that they are weaker decision makers.
Interesting. So it's interesting that it sounds like you're saying with decision making that it's actually a lot more drawn out and even multifaceted, complicated at times, you know, and maybe we want to say that we want to believe that we're rational so that we can contain things, right? Control, contain, feel on top of things rather than expose ourselves to emotions, which are actually very powerful drivers of, of.
And actually this leads us then to the next thing, which is where we have to understand why God gave us emotions in the first place. What is this capacity for? And it's actually a capacity of living beings, because we see certain animals also exhibit emotions. You know, it's very famous that elephants exhibit grief. Okay, and of course, maybe we anthropomorphize somewhat, but our favorite pets seem to carry some emotions, you know, like seem to be readers and all that. And actually, the emotional life has been studied for a very long time.
Yeah.
The Greek philosophers were always intrigued by its quality, its intensity, its nuances, its expressions, and so forth and so on. And modern science has continued to study it. And maybe one way for us to understand how powerful emotions is nothing better than the internet. If you look at the internet today, it has helped to release the wellspring of emotions in everybody. Everyone appears rational, controlled. But mm-hmm. when they go onto the keyboard, they start whacking comments, likes, comments, and saying things many times without thinking carefully, which has caused a lot of problems. And really, that is an emotional trigger in most instances. Yeah. So what I'm trying to say is our emotions play a really huge part in how we assess things, how we interpret events, mm-hmm. and therefore how it does play a very big role in our decision-making, our choices, and so on and so forth, and the narrative that we spin around all the events we experience.
So maybe, you know, because you mentioned we're talking about God, how God has made us. Maybe we can talk a bit about how God himself as emotional and how that's reflected in us as
images. Okay, that might be tricky theologically, yeah. But I understand because the Bible itself is actually full of emotional content. You cannot, unless you shut yourself off, you cannot read any story in the Bible without being moved in some way.
Mm-hmm.
When Abraham sacrifices Isaac, I mean, you've got to be a lump of stone not to feel anything for that story. When the flood happens, when Jesus is at a wedding at Cana, when you read the Psalms and the psalmist is crying out or the prophets are running around naked, you're thinking it's not possible not to have an emotional connection or a reaction or response to these stories. And the Bible is chock full of emotions, just the way the stories and the records and even the laws are written.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as for whether God has emotions is tricky, but the Bible uses, you know, human language to describe this God that we have. And of course, God is then seemingly described in emotional terms, like he's angry, he's jealous, he's long-suffering. All those qualities have an emotional overtone to it, but I'm not sure if they are emotions per se.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's like whether God is emotional or is it because he's made us emotional and we read it that way, right?
Well, that one probably you won't be able to find an answer. but you're onto something here because we are made in the image of God and our emotional capacity is a huge part of our being. There is a very basic series of psychological studies done several decades back that shows the human brain is having three major sections,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
The basal reptilian section and then the limbic and emotional and then the prefrontal cortex, which is more of the
thinking.
Thinking happens. And you know, when you are a baby, it's more the first two that are working because you don't have your language, you don't have your reasoning yet. So we actually begin life as emotional beings. We begin life with very gut responses. When we're hungry, we cry. You know, when we're cold, we cry. We scream for attention. When we need attention, we cry. I mean, it's that sort of thing. And just as an aside, what bothers me a lot, however, today, as a pastor and as a parent, is not allowing children to express themselves emotionally sometimes. And that's quite troubling because that's how we start life out as. And if we shut that down very soon, like good kids don't cry and all that, it's almost like a natural stage of our development. It's a little bit repressed.
Yeah,
and then it's we are forcing everybody to just be very reasonable and very rational very early. And then perhaps eventually there is some backlash later because we don't have the language for our emotions and we haven't learned how to be comfortable with them. We haven't learned how to soothe ourselves. We haven't learned how to, find the language for it, you know.
Which is why later as Christians, we get quite good at patting things, right, with verses and...
I think there is a connection here between our discomfort with especially strong emotions, which we like to assume are difficult or troubling. But you know, again, Samson, not a very good example, had a very strong emotional outburst. So that's probably not a good example. But again, the Bible shows that these sort of emotional intensities happen in human beings.
Okay, so strong emotions, that's let's pick up mm-hmm. on that. Because, some people will say that positive emotions are proof of your abundant life, your faith in God, that, you know, that he's sovereign, he's helping you. And then the negative ones like anger, frustration, pain, there's something wrong with your faith. So, you know, maybe we pull out the verses and then we start patting it all down. How do you tend to walk people through negative emotions, usually as a pastoral?
Okay, I think without distinguishing whether emotions are positive and negative, it's important to understand that they perform a key function in our life. I mentioned earlier about the brain development. So if you look back at it, an emotional response is a signal, like the car signal, like in the car when your petrol tank is low, right? So the emotions you feel is a signal to you that something is important to you. So if you feel joy, that thing is important to you, it gives you joy, you know. If you feel grief, so the emotions are trying to send you a message about what matters to you. So that is important.
So let's quickly, not so quickly moralize them, but just see them as signals. And
that's right. And I always say that people's pain is always valid, because to you, this may not be painful, but to somebody else, it may be. It may be a very small matter to you, but it may be a very, very huge thing to them. And we can't say they are wrong to feel so strongly about something or to feel so grievous about something, because you don't know. They are a whole person, they are a whole complex being. They have a story behind them that led them to this point, and somehow God allowed this thing to happen in their life so that there would be this emotional response. And God is saying, look, that emotion is trying to tell you to look at something. And a lot of times people are surprised by their emotions because they find that they cannot explain it away. Like, I don't want to be, you know, and especially negative emotions, we are very uncomfortable with it. So we try to get past the grief to joy, you know. Oh, you know, your loved ones are in heaven, but I can grieve. And studies show that you grieve for years sometimes. And so we try to hurry people along. Right. But when you hurry people along, you are not giving them a chance to find out what the message that emotion is trying to bring to them. So that's very important, that when I journey with people, I have to create a safe space for them, for their emotions to surface. And sometimes it comes with racking sobs and wails, you know, which they cannot do on a regular Sunday service. And so, you know, we need to create these sort of safe spaces, and people are shocked by it. But I have to tell them that it's okay. You know, let's just, you know, stay with these emotions. God is with us. He's not threatened by the emotions. You shouldn't be cowed by it, you know. And let's listen to what this emotion is trying to tell us. And then we take it from there. But you know,
that's a great point, because it's making me think back to when I was in the US and really beginning to deal with my parents' divorce as an adult. And back then, Christian counselors were not everywhere, but we had the body. And one of the most ministering things to me was to come home from small group, get dropped off by this friend of mine. And it almost was like week after week, I would just sob and share and cry and sob. And that was one of the most, quote unquote, therapeutic seasons of my life. It's just when someone allowed me to feel safe and just, you know,
cried
out.
And thanks for sharing that. That happened when you were already an adult, you see.
Yeah.
So can you imagine for young children, if they're going through a crisis, they're going through something that is considered trauma to them, and many young children today in our society don't have a safe person or a safe place to go to unload this, and they're carrying this within their being. At some point, it's going to act up, it's going to play up, it's going to burden them. And it's disturbing, lah. It's disturbing. I think if we don't have a good relationship with our emotions and understand why God gave them to us, it contributes, plus all the stresses we have in our life, all the high expectations we place on ourselves and the pace of life. We see that one of the symptoms of that is the rise in mental health issues.
Definitely.
Yeah.
So Jenny, then when you're listening to people share their emotions, what happens next? Like, what is that process look like? You know, what have you tended to do as you try to help people?
Yeah, I think the emotion is a signal, and then emotions are there, but they are also then energized by our belief system. So underneath the emotion is something deeper, which is your belief system. So it's a bit of a feedback loop. So for example, if I believe I can't live without $1 million, and I have $1 million, somebody takes it from me, I'll be really, really upset. But the reason why I'm upset over $1 million is because I believe I need $1 million. So, you know, first you let people surface their emotions, And then after that, because it surfaced, they see how important the thing is, then you can investigate, why are you feeling so strongly about this? And that is the point where the person begins to engage their belief system, their value system, and their faith. And then they realize, oh, actually, come to think of it, you know, I feel so strongly, I feel so angry and all that because I don't really trust God. There might be that, you know. Or I'm grieving so badly because I'm feeling really guilty because I never really loved this person adequately, you know. And so more and more things will come out, and then we help the person to see how God sees that situation, that there is always hope, that if you've messed up, God can redeem the situation, and then you take some small steps to grow out of that experience. Yeah.
Do you think this is something that the lay person can practice, and as a community we help each other this way, or is it something that pastors are especially more able to do because of the volume of people coming to them? You know, like, should parents practice this?
I think that if we rely on pastors and professional counselors, the current state of things tells us this is not going to work.
Right.
I mean, just like your story, it was just a small group community that safety. You didn't have anybody professional telling you, you know, giving you categories and psychological terms and all that. I don't think we really need to go there. I think on average, for most of the things we confront in life, a brother or sister in Christ can come alongside. I think what we really need to teach everybody is some basic listening skills.
Mm.
Not to be so quick to give advice, not to be so quick to conclude and throw a verse at someone and say you feel better, like you know. So if we can just resist that tendency, if we can fight our own discomfort with what I call uncomfortable emotions, I think we will be a great help for one another. And of course, there are many other things in church that can be done. Having said that, even as a pastor, I refer people to counselors and psychiatrists, you know, when it's very specialized, it's anorexia, it's, you know, and all that. And they need some specialized help, and they may need medication. But having said that, ultimately those things, you know, when you go for specialist care, ultimately you still need to go back to community care and primary care.
Mm.
So it's the same. The community must still be there. The home, the church family must still be there. That's the baseline. That's the home base. Right. We have to be there to
journey. Because health happens in community.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. So if you mention children and parents, absolutely. I believe if God gave you the opportunity and the great privilege of being a parent, then you have it in you. Not to mention the fact that as Christians, we have Christ in us. Christ is compassionate.
Mm.
Christ is attentive. Christ is loving. Christ is servant. Christ is sacrificial. So if Christ is growing in us, I really think we can do all the things that Christ did. That's what it means to be Christ-like, right? So it can be Christ-like in your parenting. You can be Christ-like at your work. You can be Christ-like in your friendships and so on and so forth. So I think it's a lie from the devil that makes us believe that we must farm everything and outsource everything to the specialist.
Yeah.
That is a very pernicious lie, and we need to stand against it.
Well said. Thanks for the reminder to all of us. So Jenny, this is also making me think of, you know, while we want to validate mm-hmm. people's emotions, we as humans can be pretty crafty about manipulation and using different types of emotions to be manipulative, whether it's anger, you know, sometimes mm-hmm. people overuse anger and to keep people away, and that there's validity in that, mm-hmm. but maybe they get a bit stuck in that habit because mm-hmm. it works, quote unquote, they think it works, or maybe the victim, mm-hmm. you know, victim emotions, overusing some of those to manipulate certain responses from friends mm-hmm. and family. How do you walk people through that or help point that out in people, as you know, how do you help people understand what to do with that? I mean,
like I say, I think one of the big things is helping people understand their emotion and the journey, how the emotion got to where it is, what were the belief systems that are propping it up, examining that against scripture, whether that's a sound belief or sound value to hold on to. And then the person is faced with a choice, honestly. Does a person want to align their life and thought pattern and therefore drag their emotions along with it, you know? I think historically, the Christian faith has taught that emotions are valid, but they work in concert with our mind.
Mm.
And really, we are rational beings. That's our most unique quality. We are able to step aside and examine, self-examine ourselves. I mean, no other living creature does that, no? The elephant doesn't comb his hair in the mirror and you know, reflect on his... it's humans, you know, that gives us that ability to have self-awareness and self-reflect. So at that point, the person has to self-reflect and say, okay, am I going to let this emotion and the attention is giving me be the Lord of my life? Or am I going to let the Lord be the Lord of my life? So it's... And it does happen. There was a time in my life when I was going through a really prolonged dark season and just series of unfortunate events, as it were happening. And I was quite surprised that in some moments when it was really dark, I actually had suicide ideation. And you know, I was sitting on my couch and the window was open and it looked really simple. Seriously, it looked really simple. It was very tempting. And I know that when you are down in the dumps and your emotions are really low and you're not really spending time talking to God about it, it's so easy then for your mind to make those connections and then come up with ideas. But I personally think that suicide ideation is something the devil drops into your head. Because I really don't think, you know, survival of the species, I don't think we would want to do that to ourselves. We are self-preserving creatures. So I think that the idea was planted. So the key was recognizing where the idea was coming from and then ring-fencing it with the truth. And at that moment, I was just thinking, wait, my life is a gift from God. And, you know, just remembering the sovereignty of God. Clinging on to whatever truth I could, with the abject weakness that I was feeling, and just saying the most pathetic prayers I was able to, I experienced a slight shift in my will. There's a movement of my will, and with that, the mind focus also started to shift a little bit. So you know, there are a lot of things happening. It's our emotions, which is also our memories. It's our rational thought, our reasoning, and then there's also our will. And our will is probably the most powerful part, the most spirit part of us that can respond to God, that part that can respond in obedience to the Lord, that says, despite everything else, Lord, I will obey you because you say that my life is valuable and I'm going to stay in this hard place because you are here with me. So I've had several experiences like that. and I realized that it's a complicated process and you know, you just really need to invite the presence of God into that process.
So it sounds almost like it's just one situation at a time. When you're struggling, you practice, like you said, we say broken prayers. We're really crushed before God, laid bare, and it's ugly. There's no liturgy there, but it's a very connected space, where you're crying out for help.
Sometimes I just want to say that when sometimes you can't find anyone to turn to, and that happens to all of us, we can always remember there's always God. If there's anyone who's a safe space, it's always God. And it's such a great privilege that no matter where we are in the world, 24/7, He's the God who neither slumbers nor sleeps. You know, and we can turn to Him. And I always tell people, no matter what you are running from or running with or whatever, make sure you run to God. Don't run away from God. If you run to God, you're running towards safety. It might still be really painful because it's a necessary pain. It's a necessary journey you have to go through. And God never allows us to go through anything except for the fact that it will eventually be good for us. There are some things that we're holding on to in our life that don't serve us and we are unable to see it. And God has to let us go through some crushing experiences so that we can be freed from those things. Or we can have the choice to relinquish those things to Him and make Him the Lord of our lives again.
Yeah. So you're saying that enough of these moments with God, these sessions, quote unquote, with God, you will start to deal better with... You start erring less on the end of manipulation, victimization, you know, and...
And I think also, if I'm the one really suffering, at the end of the day, I have to understand that other humans will have limits. They have limits of time, limits of resources. But then there's God, who is limitless. One other thing, though, that is very important, which I tell every person I journey with, is the power of gratitude. There's a little verse in Psalm 50 that says, "He who offers a sacrifice of thanksgiving honors me, and to him who orders his way aright, I will show the salvation of God." In another version, it says, "If you offer sacrifices of thanksgiving, I will show him my salvation." And I've experienced this to be very true, and there have been lots of studies done at Berkeley and Harvard that tells us that gratitude is a very powerful thing. When you can give thanks regularly, several times a day, your brain actually starts to rewire, you know. So that's the reality. Our emotions are solid things because they are backed up by our neurocircuitry. You know, they are backed up by our beliefs. Right. So they are not fleeting things, you know. And emotions, when they cluster and stay with you for a long time, then it becomes a mood, what we call a mood. But emotions are real things. They are real. You have to know them, you have to befriend them, and then you have to tutor them. You have to learn to tell yourself some emotions are appropriate and some emotions are inappropriate, you know. Like it's appropriate to cry when you are, you know, or cry in joy and all that, but it's not appropriate to just do it and when other people, and then it causes so much discomfort for other people and becomes unloving, then probably it's not really appropriate. But I think we can err on the side on giving people more space to cry. Yeah, actually, this reminds me of a funny experience I had when I was growing up in church. I think when I was 16, I decided to join the big people in the main worship. And in those days, we used to sing the hymns, you know. Before I joined the big people, we sing choruses. And so I was encountering the hymns for the first time. And I remember, 1 month into that, I was starting to weep when I sang the hymns. And the people sitting around me were shocked, you know. We don't have a cry culture in our church, right? Especially from my background, church background, I was raised a Presbyterian. And the first week that happened, it was not a few tears, okay? It was just a lot of tears coming out. I was shocked. I didn't know what's going on. I was like, oh, something in me was responding to this worship, the lyrics of the hymns. And it's so funny, the second week, the same person sat next to me. And it happened again. And then this time, the person was a bit better, took out a piece of tissue and offered it to me. But there were no words exchanged. But that was actually my earliest experiences of being comfortable with my emotions in the presence of God and also in the company of believers.
Nice. Yeah. So maybe we can just end our time with, let's bring this down to how do we train new habits, I guess, with our emotions? What should we practice into a more permanent, how do we shape new habits when it comes to dealing with our emotions? What are some advice and tips you have?
I think maybe a helpful picture might be to remember that when we come to Christ, Scripture describes us as being a new creation, or more popular parlance, I like to say you have a new DNA. Mm. But the DNA is not at first very obvious for most of us, especially if we have a lot of trauma or issues in our life, because there's so many layers that we are buried under. But there are things you can do to peel those layers off bit by bit. One of the things which I mentioned earlier is actually the power of gratitude. That is why Thessalonians tells us to give thanks in everything, to rejoice, and to pray without ceasing. I think that this is the trio of spiritual disciplines that will solve really literally all of our problems. If we do it regularly, it's really, we give ourselves lots of excuses like, I can't rejoice over this, it's not pleasant, you know, but the Lord says rejoice. And so we have to ask, how can we find something to give joy in this? Mm-hmm. And yet say, okay, God, this is how I'm feeling, but your word says rejoice, I'm going to try to rejoice, but not negate my feeling. I can take my feeling to you, I can write my feeling in my journal, I can tell my friends, but nonetheless, I will not let the feeling master me. Mm. I remain in full control of my faculties and my capacities and say, the feeling will serve me as a servant. They make great servants' emotions, but really bad masters. But my master is Christ. My master is God. And God says, look at me and rejoice in this situation. Look at me and give thanks. Look to me and pray. And I think these spiritual disciplines really will, over time, begin to make us more resilient and resistant to stuff that happens to us in our life, which will happen, disappointment, etc., that hurt and all that. At the same time, wherever we have started from, I think those things will begin to lose its hold over us because God has a greater and greater hold over our life as our Lord. So we are designed by God to serve only one master. If we keep reinforcing who our master is. The master of our past, whether it's our pain, our tragedy, you know, our disillusionment. I think those things will start to lose their hold on us. Having said that, though, I think all of us, through all of our life on this side of heaven, will live with different degrees of brokenness. And we have to be able to accept that as well.
Mm. Great. Well, thank you, Jenny, for this little overview on emotions. And hopefully it gets us thinking more and reading up more, discussing more in our communities about
how and paying attention to our emotions.
Yeah, like and processing our own. So yes. Thank you for sharing all this with us today and for being our guest today.
Yeah, how fun. Thank you, Pei.
Thank you for listening in. We hope you've been encouraged with some new thoughts on faith and life integration. You can find us on the Cathedral app, iTunes, Spotify, or at cathedral.org.sg/podcast. Be sure to join us again.